When we picture America in the post-war and Eisenhower years, we see a dull, conformist world. Poet Robert Creeley served in the armed forces overseas in World War II. He remembers coming home to that buttoned-down America and feeling increasingly out of place there.
In fact, the 50s become the time of the man in the gray flannel suit and the lonely crowd, thinking of David Reisman, etc. In other words, it's a very static time. It's a time when there seems almost no impulse to change at all, really. And it's very constricted. It's politically very, very hostile.
Thank God there was bebop. Bebop exploded out of musicians' private jam sessions and into the jazz clubs in the years just after World War II. Young bebop musicians like Charlie Parker staged an open revolt against the old guard of swing orchestras and big bands, playing their polite, regimented dance tunes. They challenged not only the jazz establishment, but the increasing conformity of gray flannel America.
Part of the point of bebop was to be disruptive.
Professor Sherry Tucker is a jazz historian and the author of Swing Shift.
For some people, it was a good disruptive, and for some people, it was a bad disruptive. Bebop sounded to people who didn't know a lot about music, it sounded like the musicians were playing wrong notes. So the people who didn't know a lot about music but who heard that and enjoyed it heard that as freedom from structure. They heard that as complete freedom, complete spontaneity.
Throughout America, young artists embraced bebop's rebellious energy as passionately as a later generation of disaffected youth would take up rock and roll. Jazz became the soundtrack for an artistic revolution. Professor Daniel Belgrad has written a book about the phenomenon called The Culture of Spontaneity.
The main idea behind this movement, I think, that permeated all the different artistic forms was the idea of improvisation, that if you made art in an unplanned manner, that you would reach more honesty, more truth in your work than you would if you planned it out ahead of time.
This is the moment when abstract expressionist artists like Jackson Pollock rejected the social realist art they'd been taught and suddenly began to fling paint at the canvas. Young poets like Robert Creeley and his friends, the beat writers Jack Kerouac and Allen Ginsberg, began writing an improvisational literature that swung to jittery hipster rhythms.
It's the beat generation. It's Bayat. It's the beat to keep.
I have as an old friend the terrific bass player Steve Swallow, who one time made a wonderful compliment. He said, you know, Creeley's as good a horn player as I've ever played with.
Creeley says that writing a poem is like surfing.
The impulse of surfing is the fact of the wave, or that's the energy field, and you're trying to ride it or go with it. You don't really know where it's going. And you can say, well, if you're surfing, you probably have a vague sense as to where the wave's going to come to end. But nonetheless, you don't know literally what's going to happen moment to moment in that situation. And that information is extraordinarily interesting and extraordinarily productive. You can be prepared, but you can't anticipate. It's the over-preparation or the dismissal of anticipation in classical forms that began to be irritating to me.
American artists and intellectuals in the 50s also fell in love with Eastern philosophies and religion. Beat sages, as they styled themselves, doggedly pursued the Zen moment of Satori, when a chance encounter with the ineffable sparks enlightenment. In their collaborations, choreographer Merce Cunningham and composer John Cage put that unplanned Zen moment on stage in every performance. Unlike the more passionate beats, their approach was rigorously, even coldly, intellectual. In the 1950s, Cunningham threw the I Ching to determine the sequence of events in a piece. Today, he uses computer programs to generate random sequences of moves.
The randomness in the sense of chance in my work is that the material for the given dance, say, I've made up a number of sequences of movement, short, long, complicated, not complicated. And that's like the body of material for the given piece. But then the order of what comes is done by chance. So one is, in that sense, constantly confronted with some kind of unknown. People say, well, does it always work? Well, that doesn't seem to me a proper question, because does it always work the other way?
Cunningham's dancers sometimes didn't even hear the music for a new piece until they were dancing the premiere. This must have been as unsettling to the dancers as it was jarring to early audiences.
Oh, I'll tell you Cage's reply. It's so astonishing. At a seminar in some university, this thing, but what is this about the music and the dance being separate? What is this? John said, well, it's like this. Merce does his thing and I do mine, and for your convenience, we put them together.
Cunningham vividly recalls giving dance recitals for audiences of 50 people, only 25 of whom would still be in the hall by the end of the performance. Cartoonists and comics lampooned beat poets and abstract expressionists as lazy amateurs who didn't know how to paint a real painting or write a real poem. Here's Daniel Belgrad.
I think it confused a lot of contemporary critics, this fine line that improvisational artists were trying to walk or trying to draw between the idea of accident and the idea of creativity, that it's not... That there is pattern there that they hope to find. Jack Kerouac called it deep form, by not planning the narrative outline of his story, that his story would follow some sort of natural outline that came from his own thought processes.
Someday you'll be lying there in a nice trance and suddenly a hot new brush will be applied to your face.
50 years later, we take spontaneity in the arts for granted. Abstract expressionist paintings hang in modern art galleries. Bebop is taught to kids in music schools. The Merce Cunningham Dance Company is celebrating its 50th anniversary. Robert Creeley and the Beats are hailed as national literary treasures.
I think Americans today are much looser, that you might say, than their grandparents of that era or their parents of that era, and that's a cultural legacy of the culture of spontaneity.
For Studio 360, I'm John Strasbaugh.